Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Europe grapples with a growing migrant crisis. European Union leaders are meeting in Brussels Monday, expected to formally close the migrant route from Greece to the Balkans to points north and west. Tens of thousands of migrants and refugees remain stranded along the Greece-Macedonia border. The EU leaders will also be meeting Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu on ways to end people smuggling, efforts to send migrants and refugees to the continent by sea. Sunday, NATO said it was granted permission to operate in Turkish and Greek waters to rescue migrants and return those not eligible for asylum back to Turkey. Omri Gonen is an international relations instructor at Bilgi University.
We have perhaps 500,000 refugees in Istanbul only, just next door. So if we have more than 600,000 people coming back to Turkey, it will probably incite them to find another way to go back to Europe. I mean, if people want to migrate, they do.
Ankara, which is seeking EU membership, currently cares for more than 2 million people who fled the conflict in Syria. Meanwhile, at least 25 migrants drowned off the Turkish coast Sunday. Benin has begun counting votes after Sunday's election to choose a successor to President Thomas Boni Yayi, who is stepping down of 2 terms, leaving 33 candidates to compete for power. Among the candidates vying to succeed Mr. Boni Yayi are Prime Minister Lionel Zinsou and businessman Patrice Talon. He called Sunday an important day, describing voting conditions as both calm and safe. Among the issues dominating the West African country are job creation, corruption, access to health and education opportunities, and economic growth. This is VOA News. A leading Turkish newspaper that was staunchly opposed to the country's president, Tayyip Erdogan, has printed its first edition since being seized by authorities. The publication now features a distinctly pro-government slant. There was little coverage in Sunday's Zaman of the previous day's unrest in Istanbul, where police used tear gas and fired rubber bullets at hundreds of protesters who gathered outside the newspaper's offices chanting, "Free media cannot be silenced." North Korea Monday issued a threat of an indiscriminate preemptive nuclear strike as a large joint U.S.-South Korea military exercise got underway. It follows tough U.N. sanctions voted on last week by the U.N. Security Council following Pyongyang's most recent nuclear test and missile launch. Troy Stangerone of the Washington-based Korea Economic Institute says the North's regime under Kim Jong-un has taken a decidedly more belligerent attitude.
We've seen a change since Kim Jong-un has come to power. The threats have become more specific and more common.
More than 300,000 South Korean and U.S. troops backed by warships and aircraft are engaged in a combined full eagle and key resolve exercise. Former First Lady Nancy Reagan, steadfast partner of the 40th U.S. President Ronald Reagan, died Sunday of congestive heart failure. She was 94. President Obama and his wife Michelle said Nancy Reagan redefined the role of First Lady during her tenure. James Baker, who served as both Chief of Staff and Treasury Secretary under Mr. Reagan, said Mrs. Reagan was the 40th president's closest advisor and constant protector.
She was very protective of him, but she also had very good political instincts. And, you know, she was very active in all of his campaigns for president beginning way back when.
Nancy Reagan will be buried beside her husband at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has asked his envoy for Western Sahara to try to relaunch peace talks to end the 40-year conflict between Morocco and the Algeria-backed Polisario Front, which demands independence. Morocco annexed the former Spanish territory in 1975. Egyptian authorities Sunday accused the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood and Palestinian Islamist group Hamas of involvement in last year's killing of the country's top prosecutor, Hisham Barakat. The country's interior minister said 14 members of the Brotherhood took part in the car bomb assassination June 29th. Both the Brotherhood and Hamas have denied any involvement. The 14 suspects are among 4 dozen arrested in the case. 2 Italian construction workers have been freed after 8 months in captivity in Libya and are back in Italy. They have also provided authorities testimony to their abduction and the deaths of 2 colleagues. The 2 escaped their captors Friday with the help of local fighters. An American-style professional football storied career spanning 18 seasons ended with the announcement that Super Bowl champ Denver Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning is retiring. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today's Monday, March 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting has begun in Sunday's Benin presidential election.
Contrary to what most of the people were thinking, that there might be some violence, it was very, very peaceful, well-peaceful, well-organized. There was no problem at all.
Sadiku Alao is the president of Judas Africa, a research group on the democratic, economic, and social development of Africa. Opposition leader Chisa Besigye contemplates proposing an independent body to audit Uganda's February 18 election. And South Sudan rebels say President Salva Kiir's forces are on the verge of attacking their positions in eastern Equatorial State.
We have received this information since yesterday. Up to now, they are on their way going to launch these attacks to our forces. Purposely that they don't want our troops to be given some of the containment sites in those areas.
Colonel William Gadjia Deng is the military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. Panic grips Cameroon's capital over potential terrorist attack. An American organization empowers African girls, and Ugandan scientists are on the front lines of the mosquito-borne Zika virus research. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting has begun in Sunday's Benin presidential election. A total of 33 candidates are competing to succeed President Thomas Boni Yayi, who is stepping down after two terms. Sadiku Alao is president of Judas Africa, a research group on the democratic, economic, and social development of Africa. He says, contrary to pre-election thinking that there might be some violence, the vote process was peaceful and well-organized. He also said there is a likelihood of a runoff.
Contrary to what most of the people were thinking, that there might be some violence, it was very, very peaceful, well-organized. There was no problem at all.
So you think that there was no problem at all, no voting problem, no ballot boxes problem, nothing at all? Everything went peacefully?
Yes, very, very, everywhere in the country. Even it was surprising to everyone. The thing went very, very well, even better than the legislative election.
So you have 33 candidates that were in the election, 33. Do you think there will be one winner or there might be a runoff?
We don't have a clear figure of the election at the really national level, but for what we are receiving now, I don't think there will be a winner right now. But we need to wait a little bit until tomorrow morning before we have a global figure and make sure that there could not be a winner immediately. So one has to wait until tomorrow morning.
We hear that one of the leading candidates, Lionel Zinsou, we hear that he's being considered as an outsider, supported probably by France. Is that correct?
No, that one is not true. He has both Benin nationality and French nationality, as a lot of people in Benin. So the first time, I don't see how an imposed a candidate in Benin. Just to destroy his image, this is what people are saying, but there is nothing true in that. The man has been always investing in Benin, having social activities in Benin. It is more than 20 years. His father is a well-known doctor in Benin. And how can one say that France is imposing a candidate in Benin? He must be a well-known person in France, which got publicized. A lot of Beninese are well-known in France, and that doesn't make him a candidate imposed by France. You know, that's not true. Don't want to score him. Yes, they are saying that that's politics, but not a reality.
The outgoing president, Thomas Boni Yayi, is not running again after serving two terms. Do you think this is something that the rest of Africa should learn from?
Normally, this is what we all accept, that after two terms, people should leave. But, you know, we still have some resistance, especially in Central Africa. But the normal way of speaking is after two terms, people should leave. This is what all majority of African Democrats are thinking. But in Central Africa, they still have a lot of resistance to that.
When do you think the results will be announced?
The results will be announced before the end of next week. Maybe in 2-3 days, we will know the results. It will be very clear.
Sadiku Alao is the president of JODES Africa, a research group on the democratic, economic, and social development of Africa. He was speaking with me from Benin's capital, Porto-Novo. Uganda's main opposition presidential candidate, Dr. Chisa Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change, says he's contemplating proposing an independent body to audit the entire February 18 election. He says such audit will prove that the Electoral Commission was wrong in declaring President Yoweri Museveni the winner. This comes as Uganda's Supreme Court begins a pre-hearing conference today, Monday, in a lawsuit brought by former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi challenging the re-election of President Museveni. Dr. Besigye also tells me that since the February 18 election, his house continues to be barricaded by police, which is further confirmation that President Museveni, as he put it, stole the election.
This is not only in my home. The whole city and most parts of the country are all under some kind of military siege. You find armored vehicles all over the city with military and police patrols all over, as if there is some kind of a war situation. This simply goes on to emphasize and confirm that Mr. Museveni simply stole the election. In fact, since the announcement of the results, the country is in some kind of a mourning environment.
Dr. Besigye, given what you've said, what are the ordinary Ugandan people saying about the outcome?
Well, it is, I think, a very, very clear and palpable view of all Ugandans that Mr. Museveni does not have their mandate and that they are not prepared to have another 5 years of the same like they have had in the last 5 years. That's why I believe that it will not be business as usual. Definitely our people are determined to make sure that the change they voted for takes place. And we too are determined to make sure that the mandate they gave us is not wasted.
If you cannot leave your home and you say that the Kampala city is almost like under siege, then how can that demand become a reality?
Well, I am definitely convinced that the regime has no capacity to sustain what it is doing, that it maintains itself in power by the show of force that it has displayed over the last 1 month.
The petition you talk about, to whom are you going to submit this?
Well, we have not lodged a petition in court, and what we are simply demanding is a political compromise. Since the regime violated the constitution by denying us the right to petition, that we can have a political consensus to have an independent audit. And an independent audit would entail us having mutually agreed independent auditors supervise an audit over the whole election, in which the agents of the candidates would participate, and in which there would also be a representation of the Electoral Commission.
I ask whether you are part of the lawsuit brought by the Honorable Mbabazi, and if not, why, and what are you planning?
Well, the law requires that a candidate petitions the Supreme Court. In this case, I was not at the time. The period that was allowed to us to petition, the 10 days within which we could petition, we did not file a petition for the reasons that I have just mentioned. The Honorable Amama Mbabazi has managed to file a petition, and there is no provision within our law for us to join any other petitioner in any case.
Dr. Chisa Besigye was the presidential candidate of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change in the February election. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Today's Monday, March 7th, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan rebels, loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar, says President Salva Kiir's forces are on the verge of attacking their positions in eastern Equatorial State. Rebel military spokesman Colonel William Gadjia Dang says there are elements of the South Sudan military that are not in favor of the implementation of last August's peace agreement.
The information that I've got is that the government forces are not happy at all for the implementation of peace agreement. because during the implementation in Addis Ababa, so JMAC and international community, they come up with a document that all cantonment sites can be divided to all regions, Eastern Equatoria, Western Equatoria, Northern Barrigazao, and Greater Afenal. It happened that government troops, they don't want at all that SPLA-IO should have some cantonment sites in those regions, except the Greater Afenal. We have received this information since yesterday. Up to now, they are on their way going to launch these attacks to our forces.
Okay, Colonel, you said that the South Sudan military is doing this because it's not happy with the agreement. What about those who say that your leader, Dr. Riek Machar, and your 1,370 forces were supposed to be in Juba ever since, and you are doing this as a pretext not to go to Juba?
This is not a true report, I can say, because the first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar, is very happy and very eager that our forces can go to Juba up to now. But this is up to the JMAC and the Ethiopian government to green light our forces to move from South Sudan to Ethiopian International Airport to Juba, because it could not be possible for our troops to go to another country with their military uniform, their ammunition, and military equipment. Unless there is a green light, our forces are ready in five locations, in Pagak to Gambela to Juba, and from Kaldak to Manakal to Juba, also from Tarjas in Unity State to Juba, also in Yambia to Juba, and Eastern Equatoria to it to Juba.
Part of the evidence that your general gave is that the SPLA Deputy Chief of General Staff for Logistics has directed the acquisition of large quantity of ammunition and weapons. Well, it can be argued that the SPLA, the South Sudan military, is in charge of security of the country, so therefore they have the right to purchase ammunition and weapons.
Yes, if we are just talking in reality, you know that so the country fell into war 2 years ago. So how could our forces could just go simply like this? So we admitted that so we are going into the country, but with all our ammunition, with all our weapons, but not purposely to go and do anything, but for the implementation of the peace agreement. But if they are telling us that you come with just light gun and all this, it should not be a true history. Because within Juba, we have our cantonment site, where all our forces, since their arrival in the airport. In this case, we cannot just come simply carrying just only Kalashnikov. No, we'll be coming with the tanks. Whatever importance, my team, then to have to bring it with us. It's not purposely to fight anybody, but to protect ourselves.
Colonel William Gadjia Dang is the military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He was speaking with me from the rebel headquarters in Pagat, South Sudan. South Sudan military was not immediately available to comment, but a senior government official speaking on condition of anonymity told me the rebels are crying wolf because government forces are nowhere near Eastern Equatoria State. He also said the government is waiting for the rebels to arrive in Juba so that together they can form a unity government. Panic has gripped Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, after a confidential letter from the country's Minister of Defense leaked to social media stating that Boko Haram terrorists had arrived in the city. The letter called for vigilance and additional deployment of troops to ministerial buildings and public areas such as markets, churches, and schools. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, some residents have decided to stay indoors.
Businesswoman Belinda Tata says when she received information through social media that Cameroon's Defense Minister Joseph Beti Asomo had issued a confidential letter urging the military to stop a possible terrorist attack in the capital, she decided to avoid all public places and gatherings.
You know, if the Minister of Defense signed a confidential note that there are terrorists in town, any normal human being should be afraid. That's why I've decided not to go out, because I'm too scared.
Military officials say the leak occurred due to lapses in their information system. The confidential letter to top military officers called for increased security at government buildings, army barracks, military hospitals, and crowded public places. It also called for collaboration between the public and vigilante groups. Adrian Joya, an official at a private security company that filters access to major hotels in Yaoundé, says he deployed more of his staff to areas where they work when they were informed of the threats.
Il faut bien filtrer, même ceux qui disent qu'ils sont nos frères. On doit vraiment bien les identifier.
He says because the enemy is at work, he has asked his staff to thoroughly search everyone, even their brothers and sisters who come visiting. He says everyone visiting the hotel should be identified. Defense Minister Asomo has said there were terrorism threats in Yaoundé. He has instructed the head of the brigade that protects citizens in the capital to track suspects immediately.
Je vous rappelle que le calme relatif qui règne dans notre capitale ne doit aucunement.
He says the military should be vigilant because only an apparent peace or uneasy calm reigns in the capital. He says research and intelligence gathering should be intensified immediately, and economic activity, political institutions, diplomatic missions, and all foreigners living in Cameroon should be protected. He says terrorism threats are real in Cameroon's capital. Since their insurgency spilled over into Cameroon some 3 years ago, Boko Haram terrorists have operated only on the country's northern border with Nigeria. No attacks have been reported in the southern parts of the Central African state. Historically, large open markets, hotels, parks, and sporting venues have been targeted by terrorists. Some countries have advised their citizens to maintain restrictions on travel to northern Cameroon, especially traveling within 100 kilometers of the border with Nigeria's Adamawa and Borno states. Diplomatic missions, including the U.S. Embassy in Yaoundé, have urged expatriates to exercise caution. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
As the world gets ready to recognize the achievements of women on International Women's Day tomorrow, March 8th, viewer Julie Tabo in Washington and reporter Jill Craig in Kenya shine a spotlight on a U.S.-based organization that is helping empower young Maasai girls and women in Kenya through education, one life at a time.
Gloria Kotente Mometa is training to be a doctor.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
As a medical student from Kenya, she's learned a great deal in the 8 weeks she's spent in hospitals in and around Washington.
So this is the right kidney?
And she hopes to share that newfound knowledge with her peers back home.
My experience here has been great. The doctors are great. I've got to do a lot of things which I wouldn't have done in my country. I've learned how to use an ultrasound to scan patients. That is a program we don't have in my school, and that's a program I would love to start in the future.
There's a ventilator in the back.
Seeing a young woman receive medical training is not an unusual sight in a large hospital like this, except Gloria is a Maasai. An ethnic patriarchal tribe in Kenya and northern Tanzania, in which less than half of all girls attend primary school and only 1% go to college.
A Maasai girl doing medicine in my country is a big deal. And most of the time I get that question, you are Maasai and you're in med school, how did you get here? It's been a great journey for me.
Will you stick that? No.
Gloria's journey began when she learned about the Maasai Girls Education Fund, a U.S.-based organization with offices in Kenya's Kajiado County that provides young Maasai women and girls with scholarships based on need for free education at boarding schools in Kenya. It was founded in 1999 by Barbara Shaw, an American who believed that educating girls will empower them, their families, and their communities, and lift them out of poverty.
MGF Barbara Song. Yeah.
Shaw died in 2013, but her daughter, Tracy Piles, is continuing her mother's work.
It started with two little girls that she first met while on a photography project in Kajiado District of Kenya and staying among the Maasai in their village.
The number of girls helped by the organization has now grown to more than 150. Gloria is the first to go to medical school and train at Suburban Hospital, where Piles works as an emergency physician.
Someone like this who has the heart that Gloria has and the desire to go back to her home, and make a difference, needs, in my opinion, to be invested in, supported, given every opportunity to make the most, because what she has the chance to do when she goes home is incredible.
The organization has proved that girls who go to school are less likely to be forced into early marriage and other cultural practices.
We have rescued girls as young as 9 who were already married, also from FGM, or female genital mutilation, which is still something that is practiced among the Maasai.
These young Maasai are among the girls who've been rescued from early marriages and are attending school. And thanks to the organization's community programs, attitudes towards young Maasai women are also changing, especially by fathers.
It's only as these girls come back, educated, teachers, doctors, lawyers, that's when they're coming to see the value of educating their daughters.
Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with rugby. South Africa beat hosts United States of America 21-10 in the bronze medal playoff at the IRB 7 series in Las Vegas, Nevada State on Sunday. Japan beat Kenya 19-14 in the semifinal of the plate category. Turning to football, hosts Zambia outplayed Namibia 3-1 in the 2016 Women's Africa Cup of Nations qualifier in Lusaka on Sunday. Algeria pipped their visitors Ethiopia by a solitary goal in Algiers. On Saturday, hosts Botswana went on the rampage, beating Mauritius 7-0 in Lobatse, some 70 kilometers south of the capital, Gaborone. Burkina Faso and Tunisia drew 0-0 in Ouagadougou, as did Mali and Morocco in Bamako. Senegal edged Guinea 1-0 in Dakar. Earlier on Friday, Zimbabwe came from behind to edge hosts Tanzania 2-1 in Dar es Salaam. In athletics, Lucas Rotich clocked 2 hours 9 minutes and 11 seconds to win the Lake Biwa Marathon in Japan on Sunday. Third-placed Tanzanian Alphonse Simba was 8 seconds behind Rotich. In cycling, Lithuanian Thomas Vaitkas won the Tour of Oran, some 420 kilometers west of the Algerian capital Algiers on Saturday. Algeria's Saidi Nassim was second ahead of Eritrea's Tesfom Okumba Mariam. This is the second stage in the Grand Tour of Algeria, where cyclists stand to gain valuable points to qualify for the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. In disability sports, hosts Algeria prevailed in both the men's and women's contest at the Africa Gold Ball Championship in Algiers on Saturday. Algeria outclassed Egypt 7-2 in the men's final, while Morocco dismissed Tunisia 14-4 in the bronze medal playoff. Earlier on, Algeria beat Egypt 11-1 to win the women's contest as Morocco placed third. Consequently, Algeria qualified for the men's and women's gold ball event at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Paralympics. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, March 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Madu discusses how new technology can be utilized effectively in disease surveillance such as Zika and Ebola. Our guest is Graham Dodge, CEO of Sick Weather, a U.S.-based disease surveillance company. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.